This is the story. The astounding story of a woman who is buried alive. And you'll hear another story. The strange story of a career that was born on a fearful night in China. Yes, this is the story. At the direction of his father, the boy catapulted out of his house into the dark, rain-drenched night. His race was a race against time, a race against death. For back in the house from which he had dashed in headlong flight, his mother lay dying. The boy hurled himself through the rainy night at breakneck speed until his legs ached and his heart pounded like a wild, crazy machine. Until at last, he raced into Dr. Ashton's yard and literally threw himself at the door of the physician's darkened house.
Dr. Ashton! Dr. Ashton!
The youth hammered on the door and screamed the doctor's name above the howl of the wind and the beating noise of the rain. Moments that seemed to stretch the length of hours passed before a light appeared in the hall window of the house and the door opened.
What is it, son? What's the matter?
The boy could feel the warm, salty dampness of tears mingling with the wetness of the rain on his face as he breathlessly gasped his appeal.
Come quickly, doctor. Quickly. My mother is dying.
While the doctor dressed, the youth rushed to his stables and hitched a horse to the physician's buggy. Within another 10 minutes, Ashton applied the whip to his horse.
Shut up! Shut up!
And the buggy went skidding and rocking down the muddy road toward the house in which the boy's mother lay dying. A few moments later, the woman's husband and her 3 sons waited outside the sick room in anguished silence. The big clock in the hall, its pendulum swinging back and forth with lazy grace, counted off an hour. Then another, and another, striking the hours with dignity and authority. It was just as it had struck 5, just as the first pale light of a cold, wet dawn diluted the dark eastern sky that October morning in 1806, that the door of the sick woman's room opened, and Dr. Ashton stepped out. He closed it slowly behind him and stood looking at the 3 boys and their father. He didn't have to tell them. They knew.
She is dead.
The funeral was held the following morning. Burial was to be on the family estate, in a crypt in which several generations of the family lay in death. There was little to be done to prepare the body for burial. Embalming was not to be performed. Neighbors from miles around the Virginia countryside came to pay their last respects to the woman. And at 10 o'clock, a mournful cortege accompanied the body of the wife and mother through the raw, wind-whipped morning to the crypt. A somber, dreary sky of a monotonous slate-gray color hung overhead as the last rites were intoned.
Ashes to ashes, and dust to dust.
And then the door of the crypt was closed, and the funeral party adjourned to the house to be of what comfort it could to the bereaved husband and his sons. But one of the boys did not return to his home with the rest of the mourners. The lad who had raced through the night to the home of Dr. Ashton remained behind in the crypt, sitting beside his mother's coffin, reluctant to face the fact that she was gone from him. He sat for an hour in the company of death. And it was just as he had risen to leave, his hand on the door of the crypt, that he heard it. A low, sighing moan. He whirled about. His eyes searched the gloomy, dusty corners of the crypt. He was not alone. Someone else was in there with him.
Who is it?
Again he heard the moan. And then he heard the voice of a woman breathe his father's name, and there was no mistaking that voice. There was no doubt from where it had come. Paralyzed with fear, the boy stared at the coffin, which had been placed in the crypt but an hour before, and then he screamed,
"Mother! Mother!"
Within 20 minutes, the woman who was thought to be dead was snatched from the casket and restored to her bed. Dr. Ashton was summoned. Stimulants were administered, and while her husband and son stood at the foot of the bed, gripped by complete bewilderment, the woman opened her eyes, smiled wanly, and spoke their names. And Dr. Ashton, as amazed as was the family of the woman who was buried alive, turned and announced,
She is going to be all right.
Yes, that Virginia woman who was buried alive because her doctor had mistaken a siege of catalepsy for death, literally came back from the dead to resume her place in the world as a wife and mother. But even as amazing as this story is in itself, it would not be retold today, over 140 years after it happened, had it not been that the woman who was buried alive gave birth to a 4th son, 15 months after she was taken from that crypt. A son who was destined to become a great military genius, an honored American. for the name of the woman who was mistaken for dead and was buried alive was Matilda Lee, the mother of the commander-in-chief of the Confederate Army in the Civil War, Robert E. Lee. Yes, this is the story. The young missionary paused in the doorway of his wife's room in the parish house, next to the crude little wooden church, from the pulpit of which he preached the word of God in the depths of China. It was not pleasant, the thing the young missionary had to do, leave his bride and journey upriver to a village 2 days away. But he had no alternative.
My dear, I've just received word of sickness in a village near Yongyang. I'm needed.
The missionary's young, attractive bride received the announcement calmly, though she knew what it meant for her. She could not accompany her husband. They both could not go. One would have to remain behind to perform the necessary day-to-day work of the mission. The one to remain would, of course, be she. Under normal circumstances, there would be no danger in that. But in recent weeks, circumstances had not been normal in the strange, wild alien land surrounding the mission. There were stories of a heavily armed, well-mounted band of bandits roaming the area, killing and plundering. The stories had made the missionary and his wife tense, apprehensive, over the possibility of the mission itself being attacked and looted. In spite of this, his wife merely smiled at her husband's offer not to go if she was frightened. His work, she told him, came first. Of course he would go.
Very well. But I shall be back as quickly as possible.
And after the woman had bid her husband goodbye, she stood at the river's edge and watched the sampan push upstream until it dwindled to the size of a twig on the sluggish, shimmering, yellowish waters of the river and finally disappeared entirely around a bend. Then she turned and walked lonesomely back to the parish house, ate alone in silent supper, and retired to her bed as soon as night had dropped its curtain on the mission. As she lay in the darkness of her bedroom, the sounds of village life that wafted in through the window were of small comfort in her fight against loneliness. For now that her husband was gone, there was not another person in the mission who spoke English. She felt as she lay there in the midst of that alien land and people as though she were the only person in the world. It was on the third day of her husband's absence that the storm broke. In the middle of the afternoon, a dark, angry, hostile sky had closed in upon the hills surrounding the mission, and from out of the clouds spilled a heavy, steady deluge of rain. Lightning thrust its fiery shafts across the sky, and thunder growled and roared like the voice of some enraged beast. And it was just as the storm broke that a stooped and leathery-faced old Chinese came into the little church where the missionary's wife was working, and in a frightened voice reported,
"Missy! Bandits in hills attack mission, maybe."
The missionary's wife, sick with fear, hurried to the parish house, barring the doors and windows against the storm and the terrors of the encroaching night. With unashamed fright, she paced the floor of her living room, back and forth. If she but had someone to talk to, if she could but speak about it and receive a comforting word in reply. And it was just as her fear was about to tumble off into the abyss of hysteria that she had an idea. It was a wild, foolish, ridiculous idea, more of an insane impulse than anything else. She sat down at a table, snatched up paper and pen, and commenced to write. Yes, write. She wrote about a woman like herself, a woman caught in a strange and foreign land, cut off from every other human being by the barrier of language, a frightened, terrified woman. And she wrote about the night and the storm that raged through it, and about the bandits and her fear that they would attack the mission. She was setting her terror down on paper, giving vent to her fright. And with every word she wrote, the tension within her lessened. For hours she wrote, filling page after page, until her eyes became heavy, her mind weary, and her head nodded. Finally, her pen slipped from her fingers, and she dropped off to sleep there at the table. The woman awoke, still at the table, with a warm, cheering sun flooding the room. The storm had passed with the night and the fears of the night. A small, embarrassed smile touched the woman's lips as she remembered her unreasoning fright of the previous evening and read the outpourings on the pages which were still on the table before her. She found herself a bit amazed. that she had been able to reduce to words so much of what she felt about China, about its people, and about their lives. She felt drawn back toward paper and pen as though she were caught by some overpowering magnet. She fought the impulse for a time and then surrendered. Surrendered to the desire that was born during a fearful night. A desire that was to soon become a career. One of the most distinguished careers in American letters. For that missionary's wife, the woman who did her first writing to keep herself from being afraid, was Pearl Buck, the author of such great books about China and the Chinese people as The Good Earth and Dragon Seed. Yes, this is the story.